Brighton's open market. This is the Reverbathon 2018. Support Radio Reverb and donate now.
Click the yellow donate button at radioreverb.com.
Keep the sound of your city independent and advert free. Reverbathon 2018.
It's Saturday, it's 12 o'clock, it's time for the Albion Roar. Welcome to the Reverbathon special, Albion Roar, here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on our podcast, and of course on DAB. I'm Ady Packham, and I am here with Alan Wares for this very special Reverbathon. Now, Al, what is a Reverbathon?
Today is Radio Reverb's annual Reverbathon. This is the radio station which brings you shows on subjects as diverse as LGBTQI, beer brewing, football. Do we know that show? Okay. Politics, later life issues, mental health issues, food and drink, and all points in between. Not to mention, we also broadcast an official Brighton Festival radio show in May. Oh, and we play just about every kind of music genre there is. As a community radio station run entirely, almost entirely by volunteers, we're funded not by advertising, but by grants, donations, and sponsorship. And we're asking you to help keep us this fabulous radio station on air by donating a few quid. In order to do so, quite simply, head to RadioReverb.com, hit the large donate button on the homepage and follow the links from there. So help, please, keep Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, your brilliant local radio station for Brighton Hove, on the air. It's what this city needs. Thank you very much indeed.
So absolutely. So remember, just to keep Reverb fresh, continuous and free of irritating advertisements, please visit RadioReverb.com and hit the donate button. Anything you can give is really, really appreciated. The quid.
Or preferably your entire salary, that'd be great.
But as usual, this show is brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com, but as well as Phil Shelley's fantastic website, we've got some other sponsors this week.
We have lots of sponsors for the show this week. We're going to do a bigger shout out in a minute, but thanks very much indeed to Jerry Hussain of the Best of Brighton and Hove, David Costa of Flowers Unlimited, Bradley Hatchett of Network Albion, Henry Butler of Butler's Wine Cellar, and Dan Maskell of Finance Planning Group. We'll be giving them a further shout out, but guys, thank you very much indeed for your support.
So, on with the show. And in last Saturday's Battle of the Birds, the Seagulls maintained their place in the pecking order above the Swans and recorded the biggest win of the season in the process. There were some who doubted Glenn Murray's ability to perform in the Premier League, but after netting his 9th and 10th league goals of the season, he is now the 4th highest scoring Englishman in the league and in the World Cup year. He couldn't.
Nah.
Could he? Tomorrow, we look to recall our first back-to-back league wins of the season against an Arsenal side who, I fear a backlash. And on today's show, Alan and I, we're very, very delighted to welcome back the Argus Journal Superior, Brian Owen, and later on we will hear from Amy Lawrence from The Guardian. Yeah, so it's a bit of a journalistic special today,
it is, Brian. How are you?
Hi, very good, thanks. Been a while, hasn't it? Yeah. I was last year, just before the Man City game, when we were wondering
what
the Premier League would have to offer. I should add, you can come down to the open market and chuck some money in a bucket. If
absolutely.
You want to
or you can go to that daily button on RadioReverb.com.
Yeah, I'm talking lower tech.
Now, Brian, at the time of recording this, we're 12th in the league and we're in the FA Cup quarterfinal. So, has the season panned out as you planned?
As I planned, it was sort of a voyage into the unknown, to be honest. I think if walking back to Leicester Station in August, I'd have been very content with what this situation is now for Brighton. Obviously, there was something like, it felt like a little bit of a false dawn or so when they got to 8th after playing Swansea. Then there was that severe learning period when the fixtures became thicker and faster and harder, but I don't think Brighton fans can have too many complaints at all with the way it's going.
Well, I mean, we're still not out of danger. We're still only 4 points above the relegation zone. There's quite a lot of clubs who could still get relegated for anyone from eighth downwards.
Well, it's always been a 14-club relegation scrap. I mean, Burnley will probably oosh themselves out of it a little bit, but the point is that what is helping us is our, at the moment, is our goal difference. Two, irrespective of the fact we're playing Arsenal, the confidence is growing, and in bolstering the squad, then, you know, it's basically in our hands. Yes, we're nervous. Yes, we're, you know, anything can happen between now and the end of the season, but at the moment we're kind of looking up rather than looking down, I feel. So, you know, that could change in the next half a dozen games, who knows, but...
But we are getting towards the business end of the season now. The first silverware has already been handed out last Saturday as Arsenal went down horribly at Man City, and then again to Man City on Thursday, which is a crazy day, a game to play a game before.
Well, I assume that they were due to play them that weekend anyway, and this is just...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but, I mean, there's a lot of the newspapers and online services are coming up with their relegation calculators, and we're featured in some but not in others. I mean, how are your nerves, Brian?
Well, they're fine. I mean, I just think those things are a little bit pointless because you predict one thing and then your results all... It's like the brackets they do in American sport. You make all your predictions and in the first week you get them wrong and the whole thing is a little bit pointless. But, I mean, I'd quite like to just turn up and be not knowing what to expect and just be surprised and impressed and react to what's going on. But even if you go back to... a lot of these relegation chats are talking about West Brom and the crisis there, and they're down. It's not that long ago. I can remember going to the Hawthorns. I don't know if you two went.
Mm.
And they looked in a different league, like to Brighton. They overpowered Brighton and brushed them aside.
But that's still the only...
I know. When you hear that, one win in 26,
yeah,
it sort of haunts you a little bit. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was there, and they looked good that day.
Yeah.
And they were singing, "We've done it before, we'll do it again." And, yeah, Brighton have come back well from that and picked up those... 8 points in 4 games.
Well, this is what we want: is the home win at home, draw away, and we're going to be okay. I mean, the point is we've got Arsenal coming up, and against the top six, we're expecting nothing. So anyone who's doing a points calculator, they realise that, yeah, as much as we'd think that maybe this is a good... I agree with Houghton. It's actually an appalling time to play Arsenal. Mm. Like I say, you're quite right at the top of the show with fear of backlash. But you know, let's face it, how many people here would actually be delighted to pick up a point against Arsenal tomorrow?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Arsenal are well-known flat-track bullies in this league. I mean, they're not quite competing at the top level where they have
flat-track
been.
Flat-track bullies, they lost to Swansea, for crying out loud, you know. They got stuffed by Swansea.
Away form is not good. Although it tends to be when they're in their blue kit, apparently.
Well, that segues quite nicely into last Saturday, then. And Swansea were the visitors to the Amex, and there was one change with Antti Knockaert coming in for Solly March. Lacazette and Ujoa had to be content with a place on the bench.
Yep. It was kind of Houghton's still first choice go to squad, and the number of howlers there were just beforehand. Oh, we pay £15 million for a striker and he's on the bench. Well, so what?
You know. So was this Guerrero?
Well, absolutely. I mean, to me, and this is always the case, the value of the transfer fee is not the central issue here. It's the value that they can add to the squad. Glenn Murray is the shirt holder at the moment. He's the one who knows the league better than anyone in the squad, certainly up front. He's the one striker that's got the most Premier League experience before he joined us. Lacazette can offer something, of course he can. Esquerdo can offer something, absolutely. But the whole point of it, the transfer fee, the fee actually is indicative of a player's quality. Doesn't work that way. Because if that was the case, Pascal Gross, no.
Yeah, Brian, if you want a striker, you've got to pay for him, right? So the price tag is irrelevant, really, isn't it?
I mean, £14 million for a Premier League goal-getter, I think, is quite cheap, if that's what he turns out to be. You were saying about Glenn Murray, did people doubt him? Personally, I would never doubt him to put the ball in the net when he gets in a decent position. But what I've been impressed with is his general players, link-up play, really surprised with that. Him and Pascal Gross, they're just like sort of master craftsmen when they're at their best, just... the brain ticking away. And
actually, you could imagine like Pascal Gross being really good at making a cabinet or something, couldn't you? I could just see him with his tools and a leather apron.
Where's this going, AD?
I don't know. It just looks... I don't know. Have we got any craftsmen sponsoring us
today?
So
what you're saying is that he'll be the cabinet maker, and Glenn Murray will apply the varnish. Is that what you're saying?
It's just that know-how, just that a little bit. Got a bit more nous than opposition sometimes. Just that you can see that you can almost sense the brain working. I mean, Glenn said afterwards he's never quite played, it's a story we haven't run yet, but he's never quite played with anybody quite like Pascal, and there's times when he's got through and you think, just shoot, and he's tried to set somebody up, and I've said to Glenn, don't you think he should be more selfish times, and he said no.
What do you mean he's never played with someone like him?
The creative, that looking almost like not two strikers but somebody whose job, it's almost like the assist man in an NBA game who just wants to set people up,
right?
And also that you can see they're on the same wavelength now, and some little combinations when things are going well, but then obviously there is still that plan B, which may be needed
absolutely
at certain times, which is on the bench. I'm sure these players will get a chance. I'm sure Ojoa will get his moment. Lacadia, Solly March.
When you look at it now, that's quite a strike force we seem to have, isn't it? I mean, we're not even mentioning Tom Ahmed yet. You know, we've got Murray, who's on fire at the moment. We've got Lacadia, who's no slouch. Ojoa knows this place back to front. Esquerdo only scores great goals. You know, in that sense, you think, oh, if only we'd had this lot on August the 31st. I wouldn't say we'd be flying up the table, but I think that the brown trousers wouldn't be quite so necessary just yet.
But one player that you haven't mentioned there, Al, is Anthony Knockaert. And
I wasn't going to mention him because you're talking about the same wavelength that Brian was talking about. I still can't think that Knockaert and Murray are still on the same wavelength.
Well, I disagree. I mean, basically, on Saturday, I noticed a very different Anthony Knockaert.
He had a much better game than he's been having.
He was actually, rather than trying to beat a man five times and then do it again just for good measure, he was actually trying to keep things a little bit more simple.
Well, you say that, but there's the one sort of thing that's actually, it's on Match of the Day, and they've actually pointed out is I'm not saying you're wrong there, but the one thing that Murray had a goal disallowed. I know you were going to talk about it later, but he had a goal disallowed, and it wouldn't have been disallowed if Knockaert hadn't delayed his cross, because what it was that Murray sort of stepped forward expecting the ball first time, but he delayed, tried to beat his man again. He didn't beat his man again, he just sort of like took an extra step, and because of that, Murray was offside. Now, the ball ended up in the back of the net, Murray never touched it, maybe the goalkeeper might have got it if Murray hadn't been there, we don't know. But the point is that if Knockaert hadn't tried to do that extra little trick, Glenn might have been there to, you know, it would have been less of an issue.
Brian?
He spoke about it when he came, Glenn Murray, how the wingers were so different to what he'd been used to. He'd been used to wingers who went down the outside, got to the byline, and he made his run. He's having to check, and it wasn't a criticism, but he was saying how different it was. I mean, I do sense less patience with Knockaert when he does try his little step over and check back this season to last season. But the one thing with him is, you almost wish he wasn't like that sometimes. When things are going bad, he doesn't hide. He chases it and tries. And you almost think, you know, do what you did before that Ojoa goal against Coventry. Just keep it simple.
Well,
of defenders and lay the ball off. But you can't. I mean, Chris Hughton does like that appetite he's got for, but there's a reason why he put him back in the team last Saturday.
Like you said, he doesn't hide.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think most of us thought Sonny March would start, and he'd made a good case, but
I mean, there was a classic example just before we got the penalty where Knockaert got to the byline for a change and pulled it back for Gross, who divvied around and couldn't quite find the finish. But he created a fantastic opportunity by keeping it simple.
Don't get me wrong, he was lively and he was creative. And you are talking about those fine margins. And again, I go back to what Brian just said about being on the same wavelength. Now, for me, Pascal Gross, for the first 70 minutes against Swansea, people see the end result. They see 4-1 and they think, brilliant. But for the first 70 minutes, until we scored that second goal, which incidentally was a goal that really didn't befit the quality of the game up until then, Pascal Gross was having a bit of a stinker. He was having a mare. And then once we got that second goal, he was on fire and it was brilliant. You saw that Swansea capitulated, their heads dropped, we scored another goal a couple of minutes later. But you had this thing of nothing was sticking to Gross's feet. Everything he tried wasn't working. But conversely, Knockaert was having a good game.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that first goal then, which was a penalty, and it was a long ball from, I think it was Duffy. Was it Duffy?
No, it was Dunk.
It was Dunk. Oh, there you go.
If it was Duffy, it would have ended up in the crowd.
Well, he's getting better with his pingers, not quite. But it was a long ball from Dunk, and he finds Murray ahead of Van der Horn and onside.
Is that,
just
again,
leave that hanging?
That sort of intelligence that we were talking about, where if you were a Swansea defender, you wouldn't have, you'd be very upset that he got between the defender and the ball, and then he sort of knew what he was doing, a little bit like happened against Burnley.
Well, he did it twice, didn't he? I mean, I think it was actually indicative, because Murray rarely does that. It's not as though he's blessed with pace, and yet he did it 2 minutes earlier. And it was got goal side of the fella. I mean, the first time it was a bit of a tame shot with his left foot. Mm. But, you know, second time, got past his man. He was, for me, it was a really silly penalty because he was going nowhere. There was no one else in the box. It was clumsy rather than anything, but definite nailed on all day long, stone wall, no way round the houses penalty.
Yeah, absolutely. And Murray filed it down the middle for a 1-0 lead. Now, we've got four sponsors on today's show and we've got four goals. So who sponsored this goal?
Okay, the first goal. We've got five goals to talk about. Okay. Jerry Hussain, the best of Brighton and Hove. Through tailored marketing and advertising, the best of Brighton and Hove supports and promotes the best of city's commerce. Talk to us about marketing solutions to increase your business and achieve your plans and goals. www.thebestof.co.uk/Brighton Hove. Jerry, thank you very much indeed for your support.
Congratulations, Jerry, as well as sponsoring the Reverbathon, which you can donate to at radioreverb.com and hit that great big donate button. You've just sponsored Glenn Murray's 9th goal of the season. Congratulations. Okay, moving on. It was Mike Dean who pointed the spot.
It was an easy decision to give. I mean, you could see that the Swansea player didn't contest it, and even the Swansea fans behind that goal. There wasn't a howl of "it's Mike Dean." It was, you know, they could the roll of the eyes, the throw up of the hands, and you know, yeah.
But Murray's now on course to become our all-time leading goalscorer.
Yes, well, post-war certainly. I think there's Bert Stevens holds a record.
123, I believe.
Yeah, so. I didn't realise Murray was on as many as 91, which is good going. So he is in third place behind Wardy and Kit Napier. Will he get that by the end of the season? Highly unlikely. Will he be with us next season? Depends on what division we're in.
He's got a contract.
Has he?
Yeah.
Oh, all right, okay, so, yeah, fair enough.
I believe he has. I could be wrong.
Brian, has Glenn got a...
Okay, the marauding Charlotto wins a corner. Gross takes a look with a resulting flag kick and Duffy heads it against the bar.
Yep, still can't score from a corner.
And then Carver Howell makes a tactical substitution early by taking off Dyer.
Yeah, he got some stick for his substitutions. I think he gave himself some, but... I used to go to Portugal quite often in the 90s and watch quite a lot of football there. And one thing that really surprised me was managers used to make tactical substitutions after half an hour if things weren't going well. If you were the Benfica manager and you were losing 1-0 at home to a little team, one or two tactical substitutions. So he's obviously come from that culture. He's sort of ingrained. It's not that unusual for him. And he got some criticism, but I mean, they did hit the post at the end of the first half.
Yeah,
didn't
that's
they?
Right.
It was the other IU. It wasn't the IU they brought on. It was the one who started. But you know, if he'd have done that, and then got back into the game,
how cannoned off Matt Ryan could've and could have gone anywhere. But
yeah,
and then
and ultimately,
the
follow-up should have gone in. But, you know, he could have looked a genius if that works. But it's and then obviously the key shot, which was saved as well.
Well, he put all the meat on the barbecue, but forgot to light it. So there you go.
You love that phrase, don't you?
Well, it was one of his.
I know.
His picnic one didn't quite work.
Shouldn't have got the sardines.
I thought it was bacalao in Portugal, wasn't it? Bacalao.
Yeah, but you wouldn't barbecue that. There's loads of dishes. Apparently, there's one dish for every day of the year. Getting off the subject.
Okay. No, that's fair enough. No, we've got the food and drink show. Should have been on that earlier.
Yeah. Sardines is your barbecue.
We've got to talk about the growing influence of Jose Escuado.
Go on then. No, it's. Like I say, for the first, I mean, Swansea, you felt were there for the taking. There, no matter what Carver Howell were doing, I thought they were disjointed, and yet we let them have the ball. I know that we like to play on the break, but you know, the quality that we had just wasn't there until bang, just one moment it all clicked. There was Izquierdo, there was Gross, there was so many people involved in it, and that second goal, just Izquierdo knows as a. Almost as he is a goal scorer, fine, but he's also he can be a playmaker, not quite in the Gross mould, but he knows where and when to cross by and large. And so when he actually set it up for Murray on a plate to ping it with his left foot, you got to realise just how cute he can be in the box.
Brian, I was going to say, you interview him on a regular basis. I mean, have you noticed a change in his demeanour recently?
Yeah, he's a lot happier. He's a lot more cheerful. And he said that I spoke to him before he got on the bus at Stoke after that goal he scored, and he said those combinations, it's literally, there's no substitute for working with people day in, day out. You get that understanding. Well, we keep coming back to it, actually. There was one Al says about the goal, there was one just before that, and I think it was probably the same three players involved when Murray had that shot that went about 6 inches wide and yes. The advertising hoarding kicked yeah. It back into play. So there were signs of that, but I was saying to Andy Naylor sitting next to me, you know, in the first half things just aren't quite happening for Izquierdo, but in the second half, you know, there was a few gaps. That the player who gave away the penalty, Van der Hoorn, the right sided centre back, went off at half time, and the media from Swansea were sort of saying that exposed Norton's lack of, you know, he helps him out quite a lot. And so Izquierdo obviously supplied by Gross, was able to exploit that.
Well, the growing understanding between Izquierdo and Gross, who laid off as they exchange 1-2s before the Colombian puts it on a plate for Murray to fire home his second of the
match. That was another really good goal in the mould of, probably not quite as good, but in the mould of the one scored at Stoke with just simple passing. Once it clicks, it's virtually unplayable.
Yeah, but Brian, I've noticed, since the beginning of the season, the speed of our interplay has actually got a lot quicker.
It so reminded me of the game against Norwich last season, where it was fairly close for a long time, and as the opposition probably had to commit a bit more, Brighton was so incisive, clever, and ran away with it, and the opposition just seemed to crumble. Swansea not quite as bad as Norwich did, but it was that sort of feel. And as against West Ham, as against Coventry, we enjoyed a few goals, and you went away thinking, well, there should have been a few more.
Yes.
But I mean, it was a great goal from Murray, and that was his 10th of the season. And who sponsored this goal?
Okay, sorry. You're pre-warming this coming. David Costa, Flowers Unlimited, long-time supporter of the show. Thanks very much indeed for your support, Dave. Official florist to the Albion, delivering flowers and alcohol, there's a heady mix, all over the world. So check out www.flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk.
Can you still get a pint of flowers? I haven't seen that around for a long time.
Who used to brew that?
Oh, God.
This is where we need Emmerich, because as much as we were talking about the food and drink show, we also have a beer and brewing show here on Radio Reverb, which Emmerich will be hosting at 4 o'clock on today's Reverbathon. She actually has two shows on here. One is all about rockabilly, known as the show is called Frockabilly, and her beer and fermentation show, which is on Sundays at 3 o'clock, as I understand it. So, and this is an award-winning beer journalist. So we have some talent at Reverb. It's just us that are actually sort of, you know, let the side down.
And how can you keep Radio Reverb going?
Oh, well, you've got to let me know.
Throw some money in the bucket.
Yeah. As a community radio station run entirely, almost entirely by volunteers, we are not funded by advertising, but by grants, donations and sponsorships. And we're asking you to help keep this fabulous radio station on the air. In order to do so, head to RadioReverb.com and hit the large donate button. Or if you're in the vicinity of the open market now, we've got some free croissants, so come down and help yourself. I think they'll be here all day. No, there's plenty left, believe me. Yeah, and we've got mugs and tote bags, and if you just fancy throwing in your loose change into the bucket, that'll be great. It just helps keep Radio Reverb, an independent voice for Brighton, on air.
It was brewed by Whitbread, I just looked.
I thought you were taking
good job you've got long announcements there.
I know it is, isn't it? I know it's a waffle with the best of them.
Okay, and there was barely enough time for the dust to settle before a cute ball finds Knockart, who does the rest, 3-0.
Yeah, and that was then he started a Kazenga Luwalua type celebration, and I feared he was going to break his neck. I think he did actually do a great save out of it, because he did one flip.
He adjusted it nicely, didn't
just
he?
It fell over backwards and then sort of, yeah. But it was just, again, simplicity. I think the defender made a mistake. I mean, you know, you'd like to think that it was a great goal, but I can't help... I mean, the second goal was a great goal. There's not a great deal you can do about that. You know, it was just perfectly done. That, for me, was a slight mistake from the defender.
I don't think it was.
He was caught out of position. That was my point.
I think you've got to give an awful lot of credit to Gross for the ball. Because
yes,
it
but it could have been cut out. It probably should have been cut out. I mean, he
maybe.
Was... You know, for me, I think that defender was out of position. That said, Knockart made the finish look simple.
And that's what he does as well, drifts into those positions off the wing, you know, away from the ball while other play's going on. And that's... If you look at most of his goals last season, they were scored from, if not between the posts, then between the edges of the penalty areas. Yeah. He didn't get many getting the ball on the wing and cutting in and shooting. So that was quite good to see, I suppose, where he was to get involved. And it was a nice little finish. And again, that was probably my Norwich flashback moment, the first one, I think, when he clipped it just past the keeper instead of just over.
Yeah.
And really, really good moment.
And who was Albion's third goal sponsor?
That was... That was our friend Bradley Hatchett of Network Albion. Now, we had his brother on earlier in the season, Lewis, who played cricket for Sussex. Bradley Hatchett runs the Network Business Club, and the Network Albion Business Club is the Brighton Hove Albion's official business networking group for businesses of all sizes from all sectors, run and managed by Network My Club.
Of which I am actually a member, and they've got a special guest.
You're a total member, AD.
Thank you. And they've got a special guest speaker next month.
It's not you, is it?
That's not me. No,
oh, good.
It's Albion regular, Adam Virgo.
Ah, right, okay.
I don't know if I can't go next month either, but never mind.
He's probably sick of the sight of you, frankly. Or you're sick of the sight of him.
We haven't seen him for a while.
This is a point, actually. Actually, I would also say good luck to Adam Virgo's. He's got his academy set up.
No, he didn't sponsor us. But you can by going to RadioReverb.com and hitting that donate button.
Please do. Listen, and also, by the way, just because it's Reverbathon day today, if you're listening to this on the podcast, don't think that you've actually got away with it. If you're listening, wherever you are, and we know that actually we have listeners in Australia and America and the Far East and what have you. You can still donate. So if you do feel like doing so and you're extremely rich, please donate a lot of money. That'd be fabulous.
Actually, that reminds me, we haven't had a Where Do You Listen for a while. So let us know. I mean, you can get hold of us on Twitter, join our Facebook group. And we're always interested to know where you got. We know where there's people in Canada, Australia.
Absolutely.
Alaska, everywhere.
Yes.
And everywhere you can get a computer signal, you can get us. And if you're not trying, if you can't find us, you're not trying hard enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Where was I? Abraham controls the ball with his hand and then sets off.
He damn near catches it.
Yeah. And he sets off through our defence and fires a shot past Ryan with the aid of Dunk. Now, we had Gordon Smith on the show a couple of weeks ago, and Gordon was telling us a story about how goals were rewarded in terms of the dubious goals committee and whether...
He set it up.
Oh, yeah, he did. And when he was on the FIFA committee, and he was saying that if the ball's on target, if the shot's on target and it's going in, it doesn't matter if it hits the defender, it's credited to the attacking
player.
I can
only assume they think they mean that Abraham's shot was going wide.
I think the talk around the sort of press area after was it would have been saved had Dunk not intervened.
I think so,
and
too.
I think... that maybe that's what they've looked at, you know, would it... If it was arrowing into the bottom corner, Ryan was nowhere near and it just flicked off Dunk's shin, he'd have got it. But I think it was the fact that it was probably judged that it would... But it was very quickly changed. By the time we got into the post-match, the mix zone and all that, it had already been changed, like on the BBC website, who get their information centrally. So it was looked at pretty quickly, but...
I got to feel a bit sorry for Tammy Abraham. I mean, admittedly, he could have signed for a big club. He's not getting much luck at the moment, and he was on the verges of the possibility of going to the World Cup. I mean, I would argue that Glenn Murray's probably ahead of him in the pecking order.
Well, the thing is, you have to bear with Tammy Abraham. He's a decent player and a very mediocre side.
He's not even getting inside.
He looked down there in the 1-0 defeat when Swansea were at a very low ebb. He was their one.
Yes,
shining light, and you sort of forget he sent. Was it? I think it was Narsing through to hit the bar. And what a sort of difference that might have made if that had gone in and made it 1-1.
Okay, okay. Shortly after
that, have we got a sponsor for that goal?
No, but come on, that can only sponsor Albion goals. But Lucardia makes it 4, turning in Stevens' return cross after Izquierdo missed him.
Do you think that Stevens was a shot or a cross?
It was a shot. It was a shot.
Yeah, in a very good local newspaper called the Argus, there was an interview with Dale Stevens, and he said, "Yes, it was a shot."
It was a shot. Yeah.
Yeah, which actually is very worrying, isn't it? Because that was an appalling shot. I mean, if you consider how far out Lacardia was.
Yeah, it wasn't a great cross from Izquierdo, I suppose, in the first place. And one of my colleagues was saying, I could see Lacardia was standing there having a moan about the cross, and next thing the ball appears at his left foot. But right place, right time.
Absolutely. And that was sponsored by Henry Butler, Butler's Wine Cellar, probably the best wine shop in the world.
I was a champagne girl.
Brighton-born and based wine merchant still requires a proper job, he says here. Meanwhile, Henry will continue to sell a fine, immense range of wines upwards from a very decent price. Celebrate with award-winning Sussex sparklers or luxuriate in hearty Spanish reds. We're always happy to help with your vinous requirements. He has two shops, one in Queen's Park Road and one in St George's Road in Kemp Town. So go and find Henry Butler. Henry, thank you very much indeed for your sponsorship.
We love you, Henry, and we'd love to have you back in here at some point.
Absolutely.
As well. But we do, of course, have another sponsor, and that is OldFootballShirts.com, who is our mainline sponsor here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB and on our podcast, which you can find on Spotify and Audio Boom and all over the place. But we do have a shirt of the week, which I'm just passing over to Brian to describe for me now.
Okay, but your best description, please, Brian.
It's different shades of blue. Light blue at the top, dark blue at the bottom, almost black. There's a badge which looks like the White Rose of Yorkshire. And it's sponsored by Bonus Print. And there's a little flower of that same sort of embroidered into the design. Yeah. So,
is it a Yorkshire club?
It could almost be like a Yorkshire T20 or something.
No.
Okay.
Here's your shirt of the week. And you shouldn't have to ask what it is. It will tell you.
Go on.
This is the 2018 inaugural home shirt of the Yorkshire International Football Association.
What?
The Yorkshire IFA recently joined CON IFA, the Confederation of Independent Football Associations, the international governing body for non-FIFA affiliated football associations. Yorkshire's kit is made by a local manufacturer called Godstown Sports. And this one has been printed with the name of the first ever goal scorer, Jordan Corduri, in their first ever game against Alain Vanin on the 29th of January 2018. Result 1-1. Who knows where Alain Vanin hails from then? Well, all players are required to have been born in Yorkshire and must also live in the county. Jordan Corduri plays for his club football for Penistone. I'm glad I said that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
At Penistone Churches. There you go. They're very
happy. This is Yorkshire that doesn't have a Premier League club at the moment.
That's it.
But we've got to move on. But sorry, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. But,
so it is a bit out towards Manchester.
Good save there, Brian.
Phil has been giving me a bit more, but we are running out of time on that. Phil, I do just need to point out that thank you very much for your comments last week. And we got one wrong last week.
Well, what did we get wrong?
Well, basically, Phil, he likes to have a little joke group. Surely you'll know that XX play. You'll tell me that. Well, last week's shirt of the week, Glentoran, Leon Knight did play for Glentoran, who was on his list.
Oh, and he said it sarcastically, didn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Sorry, Phil, we missed that. But you can check out all of his shirts at oldfootballshirts.com. Okay, earlier this week, Al caught up with...
we've been wanting to have her on the show for a long time. It's International Women's Day coming up very soon, so we thought we'd have a quick natter with Guardian and Observer football writer Amy Lawrence.
And I'm delighted to say that we're joined by Guardian and Observer football writer Amy Lawrence. Amy, how are you?
I am fine, and thank you very much for having me on. Pleasure to talk to you.
No, it's great. I mean, you know, we've asked you several times. I think both AD and myself are in awe of your work, and we love reading your stuff. So, it's an appreciation that we have for your work, and we both like reading your stuff. So, you know, you're a mad keen footy fan, or a sports fan generally, but footy fan specifically. Tell us about your footy supporting history.
I guess like a lot of people, it's almost a cliche, but it was not far off a fever pitch moment for me personally. I was about 6 years old when my best friend at the time, her dad had 3 season tickets at Arsenal and wanted to take his daughter. And because back in the 70s, football wasn't considered to be the number one attraction for girls, he was a bit worried that his daughter was going to hate it and get bored and drive him mad, and thought, I better take a friend. And I was the friend. So I got dragged along to Highbury and literally walked in and saw that kind of, you know, when you come through the sort of dark of the shape of the rectangle, where you see the light and the colour and the crowd and the smells and the energy and
the vivid colour of the green pitch.
Absolutely, the green and the red of the seats and the blue. It was just one of those literally overwhelming moments. I don't remember much about what I thought when I was 6 years old, but I do remember stopping in my tracks and almost feeling that whoosh of
fabulous
something overpowering you, and I just loved it straight away. And
do you remember who the opponents were that day?
Yes, it was Arsenal, Nottingham Forest. Arsenal won 3-0. And you know, I didn't understand the offside trap there, I have to be honest.
Well, they've convoluted it now, so
offside traps to befuddle anyone. And it was just the whole vibe that it felt instantly like it was a place I wanted to be. Mm. So I went home and said to my parents, you know, I love football, and they kind of brushed it off and thought, yeah, all right, okay. But it stuck. So
right.
I spent most of my childhood wanting to go as often as I could, and as I got old enough, you know, being able to take myself with pocket money, which I regret that that's more difficult for young football fans of today.
Mm.
That experience of being able to afford to just go wherever you want or don't go in.
Mm.
I think that football is the poorer for the fact that we've lost that. That was a big, big part of the rite of passage for a young football obsessive in the 1980s, as it was for me.
Mm.
And just going around the country, watching matches, getting to buy fanzines and get a sense for what was going on at different clubs. I was fairly politically active at the time when Margaret Thatcher was trying to impose ID cards on football supporters.
God, let's not go there.
As second-class citizens.
Yeah.
It was interesting times to be a young football fan, and I threw myself into it. And I guess that kind of obsessive nature and, you know, making scrapbooks and cutting things out of the papers and studying everything, which, you know, most teenage girls weren't doing in that era, is maybe what gave me the kind of backdrop to go on to have the fortune to work in the game.
Sure. So when you first read Fever Pitch, as you mentioned earlier there, I mean, I'd imagine you read it and you thought, this is me.
Well, kind of. I mean, there were certain differences.
I mean, the Arsenal aspects of it, not the relationships part.
He's much cleverer than me. I certainly never went to Oxbridge. And, I'm not as funny or as dry or as witty as Nick Hornby is. You know, but it was a zeitgeist book for a lot of people of that era, just because, you know, it's probably quite difficult for a younger fan to realise, you know, at that kind of time, if you were a football fan, people looked down their nose at you.
Oh,
it wasn't
this ubiquitous
social phenomenon that everybody knew about football. Even if you weren't into it, you could kind of hold a conversation about it, but you knew who the most famous stars and clubs and managers were. You know, my 93-year-old grandma, God bless her, used to ring me up sometimes and, oh, that Jose Mourinho seems an awfully mean chap. And, you know, throw people into conversation in football. That kind of stuff, well, it wasn't in the general consciousness so much in the 70s and 80s. You were either a football fan or you weren't.
Mm.
And if you were, you were doing something that sounds mad today. It was not that commonplace or maybe a bit risque or, you know, it was
certainly sneered upon.
More dangerous in those days, generally.
Not
everybody's cup of tea. So I think Nick captured that, and a lot of people turned around and went, "Yes, exactly." You know,
yeah.
And we're not all thugs.
Well, quite. Well,
we're not.
Yeah,
all
I mean,
skinhead blokes.
It was
or about 20-year-old that want to go and smash up, you know, your local provincial town or whatever it is. And I felt there was something really uplifting to be able to see this thing that was a big success, this book that changed a lot of people's opinions. And it was like, look, this is why I love this game. Instead of people thinking, football, yuck.
Well, it's like football had bottomed out a little bit. I mean, in the 80s, we'll remember just how... I mean, I used to go to the Goldstone Ground, and it was, you know, in the 80s, at times it was horrible. There'd be 8,000 people there, and there'll be a guaranteed ruck after the game in Hove Park. And then, you know, this was kind of then filled in with Bradford and Heysel, and then Hillsborough came along, and football was dying on its backside, and it was horrible. And then, like I say, I think that for me, the turning point was Hillsborough. And the fan movement, where you had actually intelligent, articulate fans were actually putting themselves to the fore, actually trying to reclaim the game for the rest of the fans. And I think that Nick's book came out just at the right time. That it followed 3 or 4 years later with Euro 96 and you know, sort of like the corralling of national fever, rather than sort of like it being this out of control sort of beast that you know was a shame to the country. And I think, you know, by and large, since then, we haven't really looked back. And like I say, I think your point, you use the word zeitgeist. It was, you know, it was almost a watershed moment in football fandom in this country.
I think so. And also, you know, we're in an interesting moment now where with podcasts, with blogs and vlogs and all this kind of stuff that's going on, you know, we had fanzines then.
Mm.
That was really the only way of expressing that fandom in a hopefully articulate, witty, thought-provoking, passionate way.
Uh-huh.
And the fanzine movement was really important for that culturally, because that gave people, ordinary fans, a voice.
Decent fans, not yet the thugs
that we'd been sort of all tarred with. Yeah, quite. And I think all of this stuff was, you know, when I think about what Brighton Hove Albion as a club means to me as a person who isn't historically a fan of the club, but who developed a strong feeling and affinity towards it, that era, well, you were fighting for your lives, where the Goldstone was being sold from, you know, in a despicable asset stripping way, where the fans had to be so resourceful to try and make their point, where you had Fans United, where you had people like Attila the stockbroker, which again hooks into that idea of fanzine culture, of people being creative, of, you know, not necessarily being what in that box, in that pigeonhole, in that little box that people put football fans in, and said, no, we're not like that. We can be clever. We can believe in positive things. We can stand up for ourselves, but not necessarily in a kind of loutish way. All of those ideas were what made that period so important, and probably is why the club is where it is right now today.
I was going to say, because I mean, it's interesting you talk about sort of the struggle that we've had, and you know, we know that what we think as Brighton fans, you know, I can, as Attila said, you know, I can raise my glass high and say with satisfaction that I was there. But I mean, I'd be curious to find out what sort of a professional journalist who, like you say, doesn't have Brighton and have Albion strictly to their heart. And when you talk about fans getting together, you know, we're talking about people who led this were an anarchist punk poet, a London chartered accountant, you know, and various people from across the whole sort of range of social life here. I'm just curious as to what, like I say, a professional journalist like yourself made of the struggle and the, you know, the 20-year battle, you know, culminating in our promotion to the Premier League.
Just an extraordinary tale of courage, of inventiveness, of vision, of people who believed in something and wouldn't give up. You know, when you mentioned those words from Attila there about raising his glass and being there, it gave me the shivers down my neck. I'm standing here, you know, 100 or so miles away from Brighton, as you say that, and I'm struck. You know, it's very, very meaningful. It gets, I think, to the root of why we love sport, why we care about it, and why the people, you know, why we dedicate big portions of our lives to worrying about it, and thinking about it, and caring about it. You know, and a blurred line between how I can't quite just perceive that as a journalist, and I've also perceived that a lot as a football fan, and it might not be as a Brighton fan, but as someone who was, as I said, grew up to be as a passionate football supporter who cared deeply about the game. It was really, really easy to get drawn along, even as a sort of outsider, to that story. And I was also there in those last couple of games at Goldstone Ground. And to my dying, they remain real highlights of seeing the club save itself on the last day.
Yeah.
And seeing people running onto the pitch and reclaiming bits of the Goldstone Ground for themselves in that very, very difficult moment. Dick Knight in the director's box with that glimpse of a positive future when you're in that dark, dark tunnel, thinking that maybe, please God, around the corner, you'll get out of this mess. Yeah. It was really, really meaningful stuff that said something about the human spirit. And it's why, you know, I don't always look at football in isolation, just as what's going on the pitch. Obviously, that's a big part of it. But this game that we love is about something bigger than that.
Sure.
And in even though the 20-year journey that you talk about, you know, it has been an extraordinary kind of, it's a beacon, it's a shining light to clubs who find themselves stricken and in difficult circumstances. But when I look at football as a whole, what concerns me is that replicating that for another club would be very, very difficult nowadays, because the footballing landscape has changed.
Yeah.
Because the sort of social media world we're living in has changed. In one way, you think you should be able to rally people behind a cause more easily. But in another way, I think the way football clubs are run or allowed to be run, there's so much distance now between supporters and between the kind of the people up above, or the maybe overseas owners who never even show up at their club, or are completely inaccessible, or you don't know how much they care because you've never heard them speak and you can't get to them anyway. What you were able to do at Brighton by going up to Bill Archer's village in the north and having your physical process outside his house, for example, you know, it's hard to see how, I don't know, when you've got an offshore, whatever it is, that's nameless companies that are half funding. Who the hell's really funding half these clubs? I mean, we don't even know.
Yeah,
and if you, or they're billionaires that you you're never going to get anywhere near them.
Yeah.
So it's become a bit more complex to make your voice heard properly in a funny kind of way, even though it's become easier and that anybody with a phone.
Yeah, I mean, this is where we doff our caps so much to the likes of the Charlton fans who are still fighting with their own and Blackpool. I mean, there are a lot of parallels between what happened at Brighton and what's going on at Blackpool. And we offer our solidarity. You know, I'm not saying that necessarily Valerie Bellacon is the answer, but you know, if you can't get rid of Owen, you know, this utterly sort of horrific limpet of a leech of a family who are sucking an old and valued and loved football club dry, and the fans are tearing their hair out, you know, in order just to save something that should be a positive thing for the community and is actually just being used as a plaything for, well, pseudo mafia. That's not football. That's just spite.
No, I completely agree with you, and must be very difficult to be in that position where you have that despair, and sometimes that can lead to anger or to apathy at either ends of the scale. Trying to continue some sort of fight where you don't see an end is very, very difficult and deeply sad. And sometimes you would like to think that football and governing bodies would have just a little bit more input in.
Don't start me on them.
Interfering. You know, with clubs that need a little bit of help.
I mean, it's one of those things you have to ask in football. What purpose does Sean Harvey serve? But you know, I don't think that's a particular answerable question. So let's move it on to the current day here. Like I say, this is Brighton's first season in the Premier League. Well, it's not in the top division, but you know, let's after this sort of marketing wheeze that they've invented 25 years ago, let's call it the Premier League. Mm-hmm. Now, we record, just to tell everyone, we're recording this just before the Arsenal-Man City game, which we're assuming is going ahead at the Emirates tonight. It depends on the snow. But let's look ahead to the Sunday game. Now, Brighton are playing in Arsenal. What do you make of, you know, bearing in mind that you've had a look at both sides, what do you make of the respective seasons of each club?
What's really impressed me about Brighton's season is this calmness, this steadiness with which they've tackled a new level. I think it would have been, given your history that we've discussed, it would have been quite easy to get a little bit overexcited, get a little bit over emotional to be in this company. And I think it's largely down to the personality of Chris Hughton and the kind of manager he is, mm-hmm. and the sort of atmosphere that he spreads. But no doubt, you know, there are people behind the scenes or higher up in the club who I imagine would share this kind of idea. But to try and be a bit under the radar and just carefully and in a measured way go about settling into the Premier League, I think it's been done really in really a clever and impressively calm way. Obviously, it's, you know, I think for the first few games, not scoring a goal, taking a while to get a win, you know, it would have been easy to worry a little bit. But, you know, I think that Chris Hughton had the confidence that it would come good. And I think it's been a really very respectable season thus mm-hmm. far. And obviously the job needs to be finished in terms of staying up. Certainly the platform has been built over these last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And never really panicking if things have been, you know, haven't quite gone well for a period of time. So I'm really impressed with that. And I'd be fairly confident that it's going to end well. But I mean, you want to get as many points as possible, I guess, over the next few weeks.
Absolutely.
Because the end could be particularly, and set of fixtures look quite daunting, potentially.
It's quite.
I think also overcoming the fact that the squad wasn't perfectly balanced at the start of the season in terms of strikers, at least.
Yes, you know, it was. It was very lightweight.
I did worry. I looked at the first few games and thought, I don't know where the goal was coming from. And, you know, it needed January to address that and to have not got under too much pressure having that first half of the season without a really strong source of goals available is probably a testament to how the whole team has kind of got their act together.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I would hope that the firepower that's been recruited will make an impact over these next few weeks.
Okay, here on Radio Reverb, it's Reverbathon Day, and we always have the Reverbathon the closest day to International Women's Day, which is March the 7th. Amy, I mean, without wishing to sound tokenistic, I mean, obviously you're a female journalist working in a predominantly male environment. How do you find working within that sphere?
I can honestly say that in the best part of 25 years of working in this job, the times when there's been some sort of issue that's maybe been a complicated or made me feel uncomfortable are so minuscule. I've never made an issue of it, and I've very, very seldom felt it to be an issue. When I started out, maybe it was because I was quite young and impressionable and didn't really take that much notice of things. I don't know what people said behind my back, that's for sure. I was just ecstatic to be given this opportunity to be wandering around inside football grounds and talking to people in the game, that if there was any bad vibes, I sort of probably just bounced off me. And I found most people, you know, you find the odd person that was a little bit dubious, shall we say. But I've always been a really, really strong believer that if you have passion for your subject and knowledge for your subject and enthusiasm for your subject, that can get you quite a long way. And usually if anybody was happy to give me the time of day to chat about football, that enthusiasm and, you know, hopefully enough knowledge and passion came through pretty strong. So usually it didn't take long to have a chat with someone about football and for them to realise that it wasn't so bad to talk about football to someone who wasn't a bloke.
So the issues...
I never felt it was a huge issue, I must say.
Go to RadioReverb.com and hit the donate button now. Reverbathon 2018. Keep the sound of your city independent and advert-free.
Yeah, great stuff. This Reverbathon day here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. We've had a few donations. We've got to say thank you very much indeed for your support to Andrew Trinder, to Fleur Shorthouse, to our good friend Andy Bass, at Sarah Jane Wren, and now Email Limited. Thank you very much indeed for your support and helping to keep this brilliant radio station on air. We've also got to say a massive thanks to Dan Maskell of Finance Planning Group. Finance Planning Mortgages are members of the Network Albion Business Club, and you can find our details in the programme or find me, if you know what Dan looks like, in the North Stand. We specialise in providing expert local mortgage advice, and with access to over 7,000 mortgages, we are sure to find the right deal to suit you. You heard there from Amy Lawrence there. That was a kind of a truncated interview we did there. You can hear a fuller interview, the full one, up on the podcast, and it'll be available immediately after this show.
Okay, and she was absolutely brilliant.
She was brilliant, yeah.
And okay, so the we're in the FA Cup quarterfinals, Brian, very, very soon. A nice 7:45 kickoff
in Manchester.
Yeah, I'll be driving straight back, I think. I think it's the only really way. I knew it wouldn't be a 3 o'clock kickoff, obviously.
Yeah.
But obviously, 7:40. They have it in other countries, but it's a little bit foreign for us, and it's difficult. Certainly for people who travel by train. I mean, I can imagine.
Impossible,
you're right. But I just imagine there are other ways, people who might prefer it to a 4:30 on a Sunday, not sure.
Well, people who maybe live out there, I mean, you could argue that it's no different to a game on a Tuesday night at 7:45, which it could possibly have been in the league, and the Man City away game is certainly going
to
be.
Yeah, but it was supposed to be a weekend kickoff, and therefore, you know, something that's at a sensible hour. If we were playing a London club, it probably wouldn't be so bad, but it's, you know, opposite ends of the country. It's absolutely farcical, and yet again, fans are not considered. So, yeah. I mean, but the point is that Old Trafford, they're going to fill it anyway, so...
But
I mean,
the FA Cup is it's a funny tournament. It's one that we all grew up with.
No, it's a brilliant tournament.
It's one that we all grew up with and loved, and it's... The FA are slowly trying to dilute it, and they propose more changes this week where, they've already changed it for this one, so there'll be no FA Cup replay for the quarterfinal this week, so the game's got to be settled at Old Trafford. So if it goes to extra time and penalties, you're not going to get out there much before 11 o'clock, are you?
No. So, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely farcical.
From the fifth round next season onwards, they're discussing scrapping replays completely and playing the whole round of fixtures midweek. So, the tradition of the FA Cup gets further and further diluted.
Everything is just geared towards making sure the top teams are all okay. You know, it's this kind of making sure you've got a good appearance, a good... forgotten the word, a good presence, that's it, a good presence in Europe. I mean, and it's geared towards them. If you've got a third division side that's in the fifth round, well, then there is a certain still magic. I mean, the fact is we've had Newport County done brilliant this season in the FA Cup. They've, you know, Rochdale have, you know, they pleased everyone. There is certain, the flame is still flickering, and yet they decide just to mess
but
around
these,
with it.
These were FA Cup fifth round ties, right?
They and were replays that yeah, when we had the, you
exactly,
know, Wembley,
but they're going to be scrapped from next season. Now, you've had Newport in the round before that. You've had Rochdale in this round.
And attendances will be affected, and therefore revenue will be affected.
These are big money spinners for these clubs. They're lifelines to these clubs.
I imagine that going into extra time. Would that have been a fifth round tarp at Rochdale?
Yeah.
Imagine that going to extra time up there. It's always, isn't it, the thought, do we want to get through or do we want to get a replay and have the big crowd? I think... Also, I go to Spain and follow Spanish football quite a lot, and there they look upon the FA Cup as saying, what a shame we haven't got something like that. You've got the two semi-finalists, Seville and Barcelona, the finalists, and they don't know where the final's going to be, and there's this annual wrangle, what day is it going to be, what ground is it going to be? And
really?
I read this editorial saying, if only it were, you know, look at England, they've got their special stadium, they can have it, and their special day, etc. So, and here we probably
have I would say that Spain, probably, well, France does, but Spain does, and I don't think Germany does, have a national stadium where with a neutral, you know, there's no club plays at it.
I must admit, I haven't really thought too much about the prospect of the
the word special stadium there, Brian, and do you think it becomes less special with the fact that Spurs are playing their league games there.
Semifinals.
It's meant to be a neutral stadium, and if they get through to the semi-final, they'll be playing technically a home game.
It does. I suppose that's what you have in these other countries.
Mm. Well, you have that, but I mean, you have with Spurs. I mean, at the very least, you'll know that where Spurs could originally have 90% of the crowd, they'd only have 50% of the crowd. Mm. But they're used to the run of the pitch. They're used to the atmosphere. They're used to the noise, and you know it's. I suppose if you play in a big stadium, I mean, there is something less special about the new Wembley compared to the old one, and you have this intangible, you have this magic, you have this certain something, the missing link between reality and fantasy.
But, you know, I mean, we've spoken to various players about what home advantage is, and they say it's little things, like knowing where advertising hoardings are and knowing exactly where you are on the pitch in regards to something else. It's little things like that, and I would like to think if Spurs do get past Swansea in their quarter final, that the FA would see sense and play it somewhere else.
Yeah, you know,
like
that
the old days. I watched some of the old Coventry City a couple of weeks ago in the run up to that cup tie, and it did sort of bring back memories of some of their ties. Having said that, I mentioned the Spanish football. Real Madrid usually lose the final when they play at home, so perhaps that would happen.
Okay, well, we are running out of time, so just quickly, this is the annual Reverbathon here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on our podcast and on DAB.
So please go to radioreverb.com, hit the large donate button, and donate large.
And just quickly, a final thank you to all of our sponsors today. That's Jerry Hussein of The Best of Brighton, David Costa of Flowers Unlimited, Henry Butler from Butler's Wines, and Dan Maskell of the Finance Planning
thank
Group.
You
and
very
of course,
much indeed,
to Phil Shelley at oldfootballshirts.com. Now, Brian, what are you up to this afternoon?
I think I'm going to go to Worthing.
That sounds
like it.
What a good idea.
Yeah, Blaine. Billericay, who we were talking about earlier, quite an interesting setup. Jake Robinson still there, and I think there's a couple of nice stories off the pitch at Worthing, and of course the pitch, which is allowing them to play when nobody else is. Even the basketball is off in Worthing today, so
there's a sound of distant thunder there.
Now they've finally actually got the pitch properly laid. So
yeah, and even Stenning are playing, which I remember as an absolute mud and chalk bath 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, Stenning, they've got a plastic pitch now, haven't they? Sorry, 3G. But this has been the Radio Reverb. This has been the Reverbathon. I've been Ailey Packham. That's been Alan Wares. That's been Brian Owen. Thank you very much to Amy Lawrence. Thank you for listening. Thank you to everyone who's donated.
And if you listen on the podcast, don't think you've got away with it. Please do donate.
You can keep donating. And Dave Wood has just sent us some money as well. So
thanks, Dave. Thanks, Mr. Wood.
And this has been the Albion Raw. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again soon. Thanks. Bye. I was chilling in the shine of the light, and I dialed to it, and it's my radio advised. With every one of those late night stations playing songs, bringing tears to my eyes. I was seriously thinking about hiding the receiver when the switch broke, because it's old. They're saying things that I can hardly believe. They really think we're getting out of control. Radio is a sound salvation. Radio.
Soul.